Dreams can be so vivid that their impact on your mood can last long after you wake up. And for some people, the dreams that they have seem as real as what goes on in their waking life. And that can be good or it could be terrifying. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have a real treat for you today because we have in the studio with me Chloe Benjamin. Chloe is a graduate of the UW-Madison's Masters of Fine Arts program and has her first novel out. It's called The Anatomy of Dreams. What a book. It was published just this month. So you probably haven't had a chance. Most of you will not have had a chance to read it yet, but I really hope you get a chance to do that. Chloe Benjamin, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here, and I want to just back to our listeners for a minute. I hope we get some folks calling in. Have you taken part in a sleep study? There's one. I've been in a sleep study.
Oh, have you?
So if you call in with something about sleep studies, or maybe do you remember your dreams easily? Have you ever had trouble knowing whether you were awake or dreaming? What was that sensation like? Oh, so many things we can talk about. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post a question on my Facebook page. I was going to say a photo, but I don't know what you'd... maybe a photo of you dreaming. I don't know. No, post a question on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and you can do that as we visit today with Chloe Benjamin. Well, I really enjoyed your... And this is your first novel.
It is.
Wow. And it deals with what goes on in our minds when we are asleep.
Yes.
How'd you get interested in that?
I've always been fascinated by dreams. Like a lot of people, I have very vivid dreams myself, and I think that they're such incredible evidence of the way that the brain tells stories. And in this case, it's the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves. And for that reason, they can be really revealing, but they can also be embarrassing, and it can conflict with the way that we think of ourselves during the day. So it seems like really ripe territory in which to explore issues like trust and identity and relationships.
Well, you have main characters. The two main characters really are Sylvie and Gabe.
Yes.
And they work in a sleep lab under a Professor Keller,
mm-hmm.
Who is researching lucid dreaming.
Yes.
And lucid dreaming is, what is lucid?
So lucid dreaming is the act of knowing that you're dreaming while you're dreaming. So if any of you have ever experienced this, you're in the midst of a dream and you suddenly realize, wait, I'm dreaming right now.
I've had that.
Have you?
Yeah.
So how did it feel for you?
Well, I've actually had it more than once. And in one case, I was having this really good dream, and I thought, oh, darn it.
Yeah. Sometimes it can be a bummer.
I wanted just to go on.
Yeah.
And then when I realized it, then it wasn't long afterwards that I would wake up.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, it's a very weird sensation. I think it's only happened to me once. Some people have said, does writing this book make you want to try lucid dreaming more? Because you can technically train yourself to do it. And I haven't, because it scares me a little bit. I think that, there's a reason to keep that sort of tucked away and to keep it a type of processing that you do when you're not fully aware. But I think it's fascinating.
You know what? Liz in Oshkosh has something that relates to this. So let me get her on. Liz,
sure.
Hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Great. Thanks for calling. And what's on your mind?
So I had one of the most bizarre dreams ever. One night when I couldn't sleep, I put music on before bed. To my, like earphones on, and I listened to, waves crashing and all that, before. And I had one of the most bizarre dreams from that experience, and I was just curious if you can manipulate your dreams because of that.
Yeah, that's a great question. So that's really what draws people to lucid dreaming. And what the researchers in this book are doing is that they're trying to teach it to patients who suffer from sleep disorders, with the idea that if they can become aware of what they're doing in their sleep when it's destructive, maybe they can intervene and they can stop it from happening. So some people are drawn to lucid dreaming for other reasons. They want to feel like they can be present in their dreams and, as you say, manipulate them, change the course if it's a nightmare, or enjoy it even more fully if it's a positive dream. So there are a lot of different things that you can do with it, but it's a very new field, so it's quite experimental.
There you go. It can be done, Liz.
it was done, and it was one of the most, I felt like the wave, or I was on a ship and I was pulled from it, and the earth was opening up. It was just one of those dreams where you're just like, I don't want to have that again, almost.
Yeah.
No, thanks. You don't want that one again. Liz, yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You know what? Sandy from Rhinelander's up, so let's go there. Hi, Sandy. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I lucid dream, and very vividly, all the time.
Wow.
And I just only recently found out that there was a name for it, and not that much longer before that, I didn't realize that other people don't do that.
Oh, interesting.
I thought everyone did, because I have always done it.
So now, again, what are your dreams? You don't have to tell me the nature of the dreams, but are they in color, and
there is so much detail in my dreams, and I have the craziest colors that I swear don't even exist in the coloring box. Hmm. It's just sometimes my dreams are musicals.
Wow.
And there's songs that, they're not songs that I know. I mean, in my dream, I actually make up the songs, and it sounds really bizarre. but I don't tell very many people that I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
I found out that not everybody does. But I love dreaming. I love going to sleep because I love to dream.
Yeah, it can feel like you're going to the movies sometimes. I feel that too. It's incredible. And I think that's what I find so fascinating, that the brain's capacity for invention and imagination and creativity feels endless. And to be able to think more about what it can do and why is really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Sandy. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
And now, again, the people that in your book that are being studied are having afflictions,
mm-hmm.
and serious afflictions.
Yep.
And are those afflictions? I mean, how common are those, by the way?
They're pretty uncommon. I mean, it kind of varies. The population that the researchers in this novel are studying are those with REM behavioral disorder, which is also called RBD, and then those with sleepwalking, somnambulism. RBD is quite uncommon. That means that normally in sleep, your body is paralyzed, but patients with RBD do not experience sleep paralysis, and so they can act out whatever is happening in their dreams. And as you can imagine, if that dream is a nightmare, it can be really dangerous. They can fight off intruders who aren't really there, hurt themselves, or even hurt the people in their beds. Sleepwalking, I believe, is more common, and there are distinctions between the two that I learned a lot about for the book that are quite specific, but I think most people don't tend to experience either one.
Have you been the subject of a sleep study yourself?
I haven't. So I did a lot of research on sleep studies and how they work, and that was a really interesting part of the book. My dad has. He was tested for sleep apnea, but unfortunately, I don't have anything that would bring me into a sleep study yet. So maybe one day.
Well, I had. I was tested for sleep apnea,
uh-huh.
and it's. You'd think I'm never going to fall asleep with all of the I don't know. They're not electrodes, but whatever they are that you get hooked up with.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
And but it is interesting after the fact.
Yeah.
I mean, I was amazed at how. They said, "Well, you fell asleep in 3 minutes."
Wow!
And I did not.
You would never have known.
I felt like I had been awake for much longer. I mean, as my memory was that.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Fun to study.
Yeah, fascinating.
Sylvie has concerns about the ethics of this particular of some particular patients in the study.
Yep.
What did you learn about the restrictions on consent and ethical concerns of research that delves into the unconscious mind?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Sylvie, the protagonist in the novel, is doing this research, and over the course of the book, she becomes more and more concerned about the morality of it. When I was writing the book, I was really interested in the idea of knowledge and how much knowledge we should have. When is it empowering and when does it become limiting or even destructive? And so the researchers in the novel are hoping that if they can give knowledge to people with disorders, they'll be able to stop themselves. But I also think that to some extent, these parts of ourselves are better off unknown. So when it comes to consent, it's very, very tricky because you're dealing with the unconscious or the subconscious, and there isn't a conscious way to really understand exactly what you're doing and whether or not you're okay with it.
Well, I'm telling you, this is a really fascinating book. It's called The Anatomy of Dreams. It's a novel, and Chloe Benjamin, our guest today, is the author of the book and telling us about it as we talk with her about dreams and dreaming. Every one of our phone lines is filled. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234, but not for a minute or two, because we need to clear a phone or two. You can email us if you'd like at talk@WPR.org or post something on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network. And she's not sleeping. She's awake and ready to take your call on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hope you'll stay tuned, because at 11:45, we're going to learn how to cook and enjoy kale and Brussels sprouts and broccoli and a whole lot more when we talk with Laura Russell. She's the author of Brassicas, Cooking the World's Healthiest Vegetables. Kale, cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, and more. So that's coming up at 11:45. Right now, visiting with Chloe Benjamin about her novel, and it's titled The Anatomy of Dreams. And I really enjoy this book, and I'm pretty sure you're going to like it, too. Join in again with your questions, 1-800-642-1234. And Eric in Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, thanks. This is such a really interesting topic for me, and I can't wait to pick up the book. What I was going to add to the conversation was, I had found out about or first learned about lucid dreaming probably 20 some odd years ago when I was a teenager, and I was really struggling. I've always struggled with sleep issues, but I was having a period where I was having some really, really bad nightmares, and I was actually able to train myself to have lucid dreams by just saying, you know, to myself, you know, 30, 50, 100 times, whatever, before I fall asleep, I'm going to have a lucid dream. I'm going to have a lucid dream. And by golly, it actually worked. I was able to actually train myself to start having those. And I haven't done it in years, but it was just amazing to me that I was able to actually consciously train myself to have these lucid dreams. And that really helped with some of the teenage year nightmares.
Yeah.
That go on, you know, when you're in that age. And it was just fascinating. I couldn't believe it.
Thanks, Eric, for calling. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, that is fascinating, and it's really neat to hear that you are able to do that yourself. It is incredible how, like, counterintuitively simple the induction technique is. The one that the researchers in the book use is called the mild technique, mnemonic induction of lucid dreams. And it does consist very much of reminding yourself before you go to sleep, I will know when I'm dreaming, I will know when I'm dreaming. And there's a few other ways that you can signal yourself, but it almost seems like it's so simple that it shouldn't work. And yet it's all about planting that seed in the brain and then being able to tap into it when you fall asleep. So
yeah,
that's really cool.
Really cool. Thanks, Eric, a lot for calling. I appreciate it. I want to give Kelsey a chance to join in from Waukesha. Kelsey, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have been able to lucid dream frequently throughout my entire life. Anytime I have a nightmare of sorts. But one thing that I experienced before that happened to me recently was I had a dream where my adult self was watching my childhood self play, and I'm taking pictures of it.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was never experienced that before. It was if you had any insights.
Wow. Is that now for your book? You did, although you're certainly not a dream professor of dreams or anything like that, but you did a lot of research for this book. Did anything like that ever come across your?
Well, I think that's fascinating. I find that really profound and moving, just the kind of caretaking that feels like it's a part of that scene and the idea of viewing yourself at different points in your life.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah. I for the book, I did a few different kinds of research. I did a lot of research on older theories of dreams from Freud and Jung, and their ideas still influence so much of the way that we think about dreams. And then more recent research, people like Rosalind Cartwright, who look at the role of sleep in emotional regulation. Stephen LaBerge has been a really groundbreaking researcher in establishing lucid dreaming within an academic context. So, you know, it's hard because there's not necessarily a lot of consensus. It's very hard to find evidence or proof for certain kinds of dream theories. But I certainly think that a dream like that is kind of what you make of it in terms of what you pull out. But I think that's really
very
beautiful.
Very cool. Yeah. And now we have open lines. You can join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. I'd love to hear from you. You do a very good job, I think, of conveying the sense of disconnect and disorientation that can be part of dreaming, but also part of waking life. Did your sense of the difference between the two change as you wrote the book? Or?
Yeah, I think so. Another thing that fascinates me about dreams is that, you know, we spend a third of our life asleep, I think, and our dreams feel so real and so vivid while we have them, and then we sort of pretend that they don't exist and they don't matter. I recently wrote an essay in which I kind of made a parallel between fiction and dreams in that sense, that they're both considered not quite real life, what's happening in the wings of what's really important. And I think it's a shame because I think our dreams have a lot to teach us, and it can be difficult to reconcile our daily life and our sleeping life, but that also comes from a place of discomfort with how contradictory human beings can be. You know, how can I feel that way and I also feel this way? And is that impulse really me? And so I think people are multifaceted and have a lot of conflict, and that's okay.
Nothing wrong with that. Sherry in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Let's see. Let's get to you. There you are. Hi, Sherry.
Yeah. Hi. I was calling because I have been an active dreamer and actually went to a dream therapist who, you know, went over dreams with you. I dreamt into other people's conversations, dreamt into other locations. But recently I was taking a nap with my boyfriend, and then I heard original music and lyrics. And it was just a light nap, and I was startled awake. And the voice was like the most beautiful melody I've ever heard. And like, I had never dreamt that before. And I'm a pretty like consistent, powerful dreamer, but that startled me. It wasn't like a song that exists. And the lyrics were brand new, and the melody was beautiful.
Did you write it down?
I wrote down the words. Yeah.
Oh,
and
good.
Someone told me I should have sung the melody into the phone so I could remember it, because it's kind of hard. But I wrote the words down. The words were something like, the day will come, oh, the day will come when the road will rise up to meet you. When the evening's done. Like, I wrote the words down. I don't know.
That's lovely. You should be a songwriter. I think your brain was trying to tell you something.
That's wonderful. Well,
buy the song.
Well, thank you for calling. That's a great. I'm glad you called and shared that. You did a writing work. Talking about this reminds me of you did a writing workshop for middle school girls.
Yeah,
which is great. You know, I have an 11-year-old daughter, so this. That's so nice. What was the experience like teaching?
Yeah. It was wonderful. I came to my MFA here straight out of college. So I was 21 and I immediately started teaching at the college level as a TA. And I was totally terrified, but I wound up really falling in love with it. And I love that it gave me an opportunity to interact with a community because writing can be so insular and so isolated. So after my MFA, I taught at Edgewood. And it was there that a colleague approached me and said that he had a daughter who really loved to write and was wondering if I would take a look at her work. And it turned out that she had a couple of friends who were also really interested. And so we met once a week at Union South, and we read their work and we talked about the books that they were reading. And, you know, they could volley questions at me about how I approach certain aspects of writing. And it was wonderful. I feel really strongly about the importance of writing for everyone, certainly, but also for young women and creating opportunities like that, I think is so important.
Did they surprise you in any way?
Yeah, they just had so much energy, so many ideas. They were so creative. I think it made me realize that, you know, as we get older, the types of, or maybe I should just speak for myself, the type of writing that I do becomes more limited, but they just had such expansive imaginations and a lot less fear.
And you had certain hopes for what they'd get out of this, I'm sure.
I did, but it sort of took on a life of its own. You know, it's kind of like I imagine that they might produce a certain piece of writing at the end. But I think one of the special things about it, and maybe this is a parallel to dreams in some way, is that you can't really control where it goes. And so there were some conversations that would take turns, and I tried to pay attention to and sort of honor their excitement. And so if they wanted to spend the whole time talking about the Hunger Games because they were just so dying to talk about that, we would do it, you know? So so it was great.
And sometimes you said you never know where the conversation is going. And sometimes that is the way with writing a book.
Yeah, it's true.
It does kind of, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think I'm always fascinated by process because every writer approaches it differently. Some people have outlines and they really like to know where they're going, and some people have no idea. I tend to know certainly the beginning, I hope, and some rough idea of the end. But I really love this quote that I once heard about writing, which is something like, it's like driving through a dark tunnel at night and you can only see as far as the headlights show you, but you can make the whole trip that way. So even if you only know the very next thing that's going to happen, it'll lead you all the way out.
Well, yes, certainly. We're certainly not going to reveal what goes on in your book, but you certainly caught me by surprise.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad there is a, this isn't giving anything away, but there is a reveal toward the end of the book. And so it was a hard thing to figure out with my editor because we didn't want to make it seem so surprising that readers would not believe it. But we also didn't want to make it obvious because there's an element of surprise and mystery there.
Yeah, there is. There is. Mike and Madison, hi. Thanks for calling. Mike, are
Hello.
You there? Yeah, hi. Thanks for calling.
Oh, yeah. It's fascinating listening about people dreaming, and I had this conversation with somebody the other day, and I said, I thought everybody did it. And she said she never heard of anybody, but I normally plan out what I'm going to dream about at night during the day.
Really?
I pick a subject and figure out, well, that's what I think I'll dream about. I usually wind up changing it four or five times. But I try not to dream about the present. I'll either go into the future and save the world or go backwards into, lately I've been doing westerns, you know, trying to clean up the old west, you know, as a gunslinger, but, you know.
That's amazing. And it always works?
I did take a sleep study. It said I fall asleep in 2-3 minutes and I sleep 98% of the time. And, you know, they're in color, they're vivid, they, you know, and most of them make no sense. I wake up and wonder, I go, well, what the hell is that all about? But, you know, yeah, I enjoy sleeping and I enjoy dreaming.
Well, that's amazing. That is a really cool skill. I've never heard of that before.
No, I haven't either. Although events that happen during the day, you wind up dreaming about sometimes.
Yes, but the idea of saying this is what I'm going to dream about and then doing it—I think there are a lot of people who would love to know how you do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call, Jeff in Antioch. Your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah, hi. Look, I'm 60 years old. I go to sleep. I sleep 6-7 hours. And I get up and I don't remember any dreams. I'm sure I'm dreaming, but I just don't remember them. I've got like four or five dreams my whole life that I can actually recall, you know. So I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's very common. There's a lot of people who don't. And there's a few things, if you want to try, there's a few things you can do. I learned in the course of writing the book. Some people wake themselves up earlier with an alarm clock so that they might still be in REM sleep when dreaming occurs, and then write down anything that you can remember right away, because it usually tends to fade pretty quickly. But everybody does dream, and many people never remember it. So you're certainly not alone.
We had, thanks for calling, Jeff. I had a comment on Facebook from Barbara, who says, I've suffered my entire life, and she's 68, from lucid dreams. It's an incredible and wonderful experience. Bad dreams can be changed by my efforts to have a great conclusion. But occasionally I know I am asleep and dreaming, but am painfully aware that I am paralyzed. I have to force myself to wake up enough to be able to move or make noise so that my husband is aware of my plight. Horrible to be paralyzed.
Yes, I've heard of that. I was actually...
I've had that happen to me,
have
too.
You? I was talking about that with a friend yesterday who was saying that's a big fear of hers, and I can imagine that is very scary.
It is extremely scary.
Yeah.
I mean, because you're just not... I mean, you are not moving.
And, yeah.
And you need to wake up. You just like, wake up
so
I can move.
Yeah.
Betsy in Fitchburg, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This is a recurring dream, an evolving dream. When I was a teenager, I dreamt that I could fly, just myself. But I had to, like, go in sort of a meditative state. It was a very slow process. And literally, over the years, I would have dreams of flying, and I perfected my technique.
Oh, wow.
In my dreams. Huh. And it got to be the point where I could just kind of, you know, run along and just start flying. And it was always interesting to me.
Yeah.
Other life.
Yeah. I think it's fascinating to be able to develop a skill and that you have the opportunity to do that because the dreams are recurring. That's very neat.
That is cool. I would have, as a kid, I'd have a dream where I would jump, and I would jump way up in the air, and I'd be way above, you know. But then when I landed, usually some person would grab me, and then I'd wake up. I'd scream and wake up. That was not any fun at all.
No, you needed this person's technique. You need to learn how to stay up there.
I tell you.
I had to work on it for years. So.
I remember being, after I had that dream a couple of times, I was like, oh, no, I'm coming down. That guy's going to grab me again.
Oh, gosh.
And I don't remember how old I was, probably 8, 9 years old, somewhere in there.
Well, I just think it's so amazing that the calls that we've had already are telling me that people are really longing to share their dreams and to talk about them. And this is a part of our life that, you know, maybe you tell your partner, if your partner is like mine, he's amazing at listening to them, but it's also like, okay, yes, you can tell me your dream again, poor guy. And so I think it is this part of ourselves that we keep very, very repressed. And so I think it's incredible that we have callers who want to talk about it.
Yeah, I think it's great. Thanks, Betsy. And Michael in Linksville, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, hi there. I had the most amazing dream. It was June this year, and there was actually a thunderstorm going on, and I was laying in bed, and I was dreaming that I was laying in bed, and I looked out my window, and an owl was flying at me, and I looked at the owl, and then I looked what it was carrying in its talons, and it was carrying a burning, flaming, smoldering bird, and I looked at the bird for... You know, time is not a part of this equation. I don't know how long that was.
Wow.
I just saw it. I saw the phoenix, and I woke up. It was so detailed. I woke up, and I thought, how could I have that vision? I've never seen it in a movie. I saw it actually probably a year and a half ago, a fictional character, a drawing in a book. That's the closest I've ever seen to, like, you know, what the phoenix looks like. And I saw it. And I just think just think with the amount of energy in the universe, there's like trillions of quarks that pass through our bodies as we've had this conversation. You know, it's amazing to think that maybe thoughts could be brought to a person's mind, you know, as mm-hmm. they lay. So, you know, maybe dreams are within someone, but maybe they also come from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And that is how maybe I could even see such a mm-hmm. thing. And other people have seen it.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much for calling. What kinds of dreams in the book, mm-hmm. In your book, and the book again is titled The Anatomy of Dreams, and our guest, the author, Chloe Benjamin, what kinds of dreams can you talk about some of the dreams that exist in the book?
That the characters have? Well, it sort of depends on the character. There's Gabe, Sylvie's significant other, often dreams of transportation and escape, and that sort of weaves into his storyline. I feel like I shouldn't say too much about Sylvie's dreams because
I don't want to
give anything away. But a lot of the other dreams that are described are of people who have sleep disorders, and again, they can be really violent and quite frightening, and also, you know, evidence of trauma, nightmares.
And I have to mention that for someone who lives on the east side of Madison and who actually went to Cottage Grove Grade School,
uh-huh.
this is a fun book for me because you in the book itself, this is your setting is partially on the east side of Madison.
Yes, yes. I can't believe I didn't mention that before. It is. The couple lives on East Main Street, and there's kind of a fun story with that. I was taking the bus home one day, and I was thinking about the novel, and I got so lost in my daydreams that I forgot to get off at my stop. And so I had to take the bus all the way back around, and we passed this house that was next to the train tracks on East Main, and I just thought, that's where they live. So it was really fun to set it here, and I'm glad to hear you say it was enjoyable to read because I'm not a native of Madison, even though I've lived here for 4 years. And so now I'm always afraid somebody's going to come up to me and say, that's not the right chocolate shop or.
Oh, it was fun. It was that was just a bonus for me to have that in there. And then to have the doctor, I think, living in Cottage Grove.
Yes. Yeah.
This is where I went to grade school.
That's so neat. Yeah, it was really fun to set it there.
Betty in Oak Creek, thanks for calling. Hi.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I don't know about, no, guys, this has to be about 25 years ago. I had a grandson, and he was about 7 or so, maybe 6 or whatever. My neighbors next door were putting up a small pool for summer, and for their 2 children, which were about the same age. And I woke up crying, and I was just in sweat, and I was sobbing. And I had dreamt that my grandson had died. He drowned in that pool. And, you know, to this day, that is so vivid to me. Now, I am afraid of water. So is that probably the reason?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, man.
Yeah, gosh, that would be awful.
That would be really awful. But you can see where that, you know, I can see where that dream could come up.
Yeah, clearly very rooted in a specific fear that arose from that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Betty, for sharing that. I appreciate it very much. I want to give Ray and Rhinelander a chance to join us as well. Ray, thank you for calling. Hi.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your guest on being on. I have a variety of different experiences related to dream and dream works. One of the most amazing experiences I had, there's a way to train yourself that when you're in a dream state and you're actually walking somewhere or wherever you are, you stop, you consciously think of your body and yourself, and you can actually physically feel yourself actually materialize in that moment, and then you touch your head, and then you touch your shoulders, and then you touch your toes. And if you make it through that part before you wake up and you breathe in quick, you can actually feel your physical body going into that state. And that took many years of meditation and a variety of different things to get to that point. But you can do these things. Also, a lot of dreams don't mean what they are. Say, like, you fall off a cliff. Well, that doesn't mean that you're going to die and fall off a cliff. It could mean a variety of things, like you're falling towards something or leaving something. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I just wanted to add that you can do things to consciously work things out in your dream state. And it's been proven. I'm not the only one that's ever done this. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling.
Very interesting. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Marin in Ashland, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had an interesting dream anecdote from a few months ago.
Uh-huh.
I dreamed that I had woken up in my bedroom, and I wasn't aware that I was dreaming at the time. I heard someone at my front door, which kind of scared me because it was supposed to be locked. And then I heard someone walking down my upstairs hallway towards my bedroom, and I sat up in bed, and I saw this really tall, dark figure standing at the end of my hallway. And I reached for the baseball bat next to my bed, and I was really scared, and it approached a little closer, but it didn't come into my room. And it spoke to me, and it said, when you wake up, you're going to remember this is a dream, but I need you to listen very carefully to what I have to tell you. It's very important. And then I woke up.
No!
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That is a cliffhanger.
You could write a story about that, a short story about that one, Chloe.
Wow, yeah, that's incredible. That's really interesting.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Why would you wake up then?
I know. Horrible.
That's horrible. Oh, or maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe, you know what?
Maybe you didn't want to know.
Maybe you didn't want to know. We had a Facebook post from Kay who says, while I was pregnant with my first child, I had a recurring dream that I gave birth to a cat.
Oh, wow.
As my due date neared, the dream became realistic to the point that I woke depressed that I gave birth to a cat and not a human baby. An added note, a full-blown animal lover. I'm a full-blown animal lover. Talking with other moms, giving birth to an animal dream during pregnancy was not uncommon.
I'm not surprised. I think probably... Did she say it was her first child that she was?
Yes.
I mean, I feel like that must be such an incredibly difficult thing to wrap your mind around or imagine if you haven't experienced it before. So maybe the brain can only sort of draw a parallel between something that you do know, which is being a mother to an animal.
And good grievy, good grief, the amount of hormonal change that's going on.
Yeah.
With that first or any child.
Yeah.
Man, is something. Well... The book is just out. When it just like in a week or two ago.
Yeah, it actually just came out a week ago today.
So a week ago today. So obviously we don't have any idea as to how it's going or is it selling?
Well, we hope so. I think, yeah. I was just at the Brooklyn Book Fest over the weekend and we sold out there. So that was really exciting.
Excellent.
But it's a first novel. It's my debut. And so part of the challenge is just getting out the word and sharing with people. So
are you going to be getting around to do some talks and stuff?
Yes, I will be reading at Boswell Books in Milwaukee this weekend on Saturday.
On Saturday?
And then Arcadia Books in Spring Green on Sunday. You can go to my website if you'd like to see the times and locations for that. It's Chloe Krug, K-R-U-G, Benjamin.com. And I'll also be at the Wisconsin Book Fest in October.
Oh, that Wisconsin Book Fest is always
a lot
of fun. It's a
really
wonderful
is.
Festival.
Yes.
Well, this has been just great. I really hope this book does well. I hope get people, because once they start to read it, they're going to want to finish. And many of them will be surprised like me.
Well, thank you so much. This was so much
fun.
I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Chloe. Thank you so much. Chloe Benjamin, our guest today. Graduate of the University of Wisconsin Master of Fine Arts program. She also has her undergrad degree at Vassar. And the author of the novel, The Anatomy of Dreams, Chloe Benjamin. And what's your website again?
It's ChloeKrugBenjamin.com. And so Krug is spelled K-R-U-G, and Benjamin is like the boy's name.
And like the boy's name.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, that was fun, wasn't it? We're going to have some continued fun as we talk about something that you may or may not like. Do you like brassicas? You know what I'm talking about? Kale, broccoli, Brussels sprouts? We're going to talk with the author of a book about how to prepare them beautifully. And she's got some wonderful recipes to share with us. Laura Russell joins us next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.